Blog Talk Radio.
Take back control. Well, hello, folks. Hopefully you can hear me tonight. Looks like Scott got knocked off of there a bit. But that's okay. We'll get on with the show until we can get him on here. And we'll keep trying for that.
Okay. Thank you, Sam.
Now,
yes.
All right.
I appreciate that. You know, you guys just missed a long tirade that I was just giving out, just now talking about the problems with Blog Talk. And I'll just give you a quick synopsis of it. And that is that I don't know if this is if it's an across-the-board problem where all of the hosts are experiencing issues with Blog Talk. And if it is, then the folks at Blog Talk, they've got to do something about that, because this isn't a free program. This isn't freeware. I pay for this. I pay to come on the air and do the show. I pay about $600 or more a year. So if this is a problem across the board because they're operating beyond their capacities, then they need to get that fixed. If not, if for some bizarre reason it is an issue that's directed specifically at certain hosts, and I don't want to put my tinfoil hat on because it's hard to make it fit on my head. But if that's the case, then something needs to be done about that too. Either way, what I want to do is tell you that I apologize for the difficulty last week and the week before and the week before and the 100 weeks before that. This reminds me of one of my old tractors, you know, that it'll run and it'll eventually get started. You'll eventually plow the field with it. But, man, you got to go through some shenanigans to get it running at times. So my apologies for that. And I've sent in, I guess, about 6 or 7 requests for an issue tickets to the system, and I have not gotten a single answer yet, not a single one, nothing. I've spoken to, sent some letters out this week to other networks to see about getting hosted there, so that's probably what we'll end up doing. I know I've talked about it for quite a while, but it turned into such a big issue to try and grab everything and move it over to a new location that I just haven't. I've just put up with the trouble. Okay, thanks everybody for tuning in tonight. The Rifleman Radio Show is dedicated to bringing you the absolute best information possible on firearms, shooting, rifle marksmanship, American heritage, and the sacred obligation each and every American has to safeguard the freedoms and liberties that living in this nation affords them. That's each and every one of you guys. That's me, and that's each and every one of you. And that obligation is an open-ended, non-delegatable obligation. That means you can't hand it off to somebody. You can't expect somebody else to do it for you, because that's been going on for too long. Folks, for too long, we have been expecting the other person to do this for us. We've been expecting someone else to take care of this for us. Somebody else will fix it. Somebody else will make sure that nothing's going wrong and that the nation is headed in the right direction. And I'll tell you what, the founders and the framers of the Constitution did such an excellent job in setting this nation up that it has indeed, for 230-plus years, it has indeed motored along pretty fantastically. If I had to do the first major tune-ups and major checks on my engine at 230 years, I'd be awfully happy. But the fact remains that it does need a tune-up, that we do need – we're at that point where we have to do something. The title of the show tonight was Boiling Point America, Nation on the Abyss, and that's us. That is us. We are a nation that has become so polarized, so angry in our ideas that we've we've opened up a huge chasm between the two sides. And I know there's a lot more than two sides, right? But the lines are drawn with two sides. So that's how it is. And for the most part, no one is willing to meet in the middle. And I don't know that anyone even knows where the middle is anymore. If we were to compare the way that our current, the two sides are currently set up now in America, we compared it to an American highway, the middle would not be that yellow line that goes down between the two lanes. It would be the edge. It would be where the shoulder meets the dirt in the opposing lane. That's where the middle is now, or where it has been drawn for us by the folks. And listen, I don't want to talk politics as far as saying saying that one side or the other is bad, because they both pretty much suck. But the left has pulled the middle of the road all the way to the edge on their side, all the way to the edge. And I think that even if folks wanted to get out and meet in the middle, they wouldn't know where, they wouldn't know where to get to. They wouldn't know how to get there. And what do we do about this? And like I said, guys, don't take any offense tonight. If you guys, I know that we've got a lot of folks listening tonight, a lot of folks in the program that are Democrats. We got a lot of folks that are Republicans, conservatives, etc. And whenever you hear me say the left, I'm not saying the Democrats. I'm saying the left, because I feel like the Democratic Party has been hijacked and shanghaied by the far left. It has been pulled and dragged with them to a place that I don't think the Democrats ever wanted to be in the first place. So don't take any offense, because, as I said, I'm not trying to disparage one party or the other, because, as I said, I think that they are both equally vile most of the time. And that is the party, not individuals who vote a certain way, all right? So nobody gets their feathers in a ruffle. So how are we going to fix this? What are we going to do about this? Because right now, the two sides are so far apart. When you have folks who think that they've become so polarized over the last few years, but the last incident with the school shooting has galvanized a lot of folks to decide that firearms are evil. Firearms are evil, and that is the main problem the nation faces today, are these evil firearms. And, of course, this is one of the things that the government loves to use, and both sides like to use the same thing, and that is any kind of an issue that will polarize, any kind of an issue that will take the headlines, so that you won't look at other things. You won't look at the economy. You won't look at how poorly we're doing, how poorly the economy is doing. Instead, you'll get in the street and you'll get into a fist fight with your neighbor over the Second Amendment. That's how the government apparently these days loves to conduct its business. Let's get these folks riled up. Let's get them out in the street and let's have them just punching each other. Okay, hurry up. Hurry up. Let's vote for these tax increases. Let's vote for our own pay raises. Let's vote to make sure that we have a gold-plated healthcare policy. and that we get a lifetime pension from serving 4 years or a few years at our job. Who else gets that? Who else gets that? You show me I want to work for a company where I can work for them for 4 years and I get a lifetime pension. I would love to have that. I don't think there is one. I can't find one. They love to get the people out in the streets and punching each other because it takes the spotlight off them. It takes the spotlight off of a government that has become so corrupt, and has managed to mismanage our national affairs so horribly that we are on the brink of collapse. This is one of the things that a lot of folks don't talk about. They don't want to talk about the fact that our spending is way out ahead of what we're bringing in, that the debts that we're incurring, that our national debt has become so huge that I don't know if there is a way for it to ever be paid back. So what happens when you take a loan from a bank and you can't pay it back? What happens? They foreclose. They foreclose on you, and you forfeit. You forfeit the loan. You forfeit the property that you put up. You go into bankruptcy. And that is something that I can just about absolutely guarantee you that we're headed for. Now, how bad is it going to be? I don't know. I don't think that anybody does. I don't think there's a soul out there that knows for a fact how bad it's going to be. Even if there really are people out there who are the architects of this disaster, I don't think that they have any idea of how bad it's going to be. But I can tell you there is not any how good is it going to be to it. It's all has to be classified as how bad it's going to be. When our nation cannot pay its debts, when we cannot pay for the things that we're buying from other nations, we cannot pay the money back that has been lent to us by other nations, and that is a huge amount right now, then everything is going to come to a screeching halt. And you may think that, well, that's impossible. Maybe that could have happened back in the 30s, and it did. Maybe that could have happened back in the 30s, but that can't happen today. Well, guys, look around you. It's already been happening. It's happened in Greece. It's happened in Argentina. It's happened in Eastern Europe. So it can absolutely happen. And it is going to happen. It's going to happen to us. Because when we have trillions of dollars in debt, trillions of dollars of national debt, and our lawmakers, our senators, our congressmen, our representatives, when they get together and they cannot even cut $30 billion off of a spending bill, and I don't think that people understand the enormous sums that we're talking about, the enormous sums of money that we're talking about. If you go, if you get on Google, you Google the national debt clock, they'll give you a currently running clock that's keeping track of the national debt. And what it does is it's the numbers are clicking away. And the debt that we're incurring because of our overspending, the debt that we're incurring, we're talking about millions and millions of dollars every second. Every second. Every 60 seconds in a minute is millions and millions of dollars. All those millions of dollars per second times 60 for a minute times 60 minutes to make an hour, and money, the debt is just, it's racking up faster and faster. And the government's answer is to spend more, to spend more. And then, to fix it, of course, well, we must tax our citizens more. We must tax them more. They must give us more money because we need more, because we have spent more than we had, so we'll need some more money. And the government can't go into its own purse and get money. Why? Because the government has no money, has no ability to make money. The only way the government ends up with a single penny is to reach in your pocket and take the penny out. The government has no ability to make money. The only way the government makes money is to get in your pocket and take the money out of your pocket. And because they have misspent those dollars that they've taken from you, now they have to ask for more. There is no end to this. There is no good end, anyway. I don't see any good end to this. And still, the question remains, and that is, what are we going to do about it? What can we do about it? Well, I'll tell you right now that the very first thing you better do is you better start getting ready for this crash. You better start getting ready for having no money. For the government having no money. Of course, if the government doesn't have any, they've already taken all yours, and you're not going to have any. Because once we reach this great big train wreck, we're all going to suffer, okay? We're all going to suffer. It's not just going to be the government. And listen, we just recently have reached that point where I believe over 50% of Americans were now on the government payroll in one way or another. Over 50% of Americans are receiving some type of government pay or subsidy or food stamps or welfare or something. Over 50% of Americans are there. Do you think that those... over 50%, do you think that they will voluntarily contact their representatives or vote to have their portion of the federal government money limited? I don't think so. I don't think so. Listen, if you've got a job with the federal government, I'm not trying to bash on you. Okay, there are plenty of good reasons to be getting a government paycheck. Getting paid for services rendered is a perfectly legitimate way to get a paycheck from the government. But I also think that the government has grown too large. The government has grown tremendously, overgrown what the founders envisioned for it. We've gotten to the point where we are federalizing everything, where everything is becoming government controlled, government run by the federal authorities, and I'm sure that a great deal of that is certainly by no accident. If the federal government is is paying Homeland Security and GSA and all of the rest of these folks, then they're beholden to the federal government. And they will certainly not vote to limit the federal government, because that's their economic lifeline. The government was never meant to be this overreaching, to have gotten this big and this out of control. So once again, I'm going to ask you, because I don't have the answer. I'm searching for it just like you, but I would certainly like to hear people's suggestions on how we're going to fix this. And that's one of the reasons I do the radio show live, guys, is so that you will call in and you will tell me what your thoughts and your ideas are. That's 347-308-8790. 347-308-8790. I'm not going to keep doing the show live if folks are not going to call in and participate, because what's the point in that, okay? I can do a podcast any time of the day or night, and I don't have to be somewhere at some specific time. I don't have to take any callers. I can just rant and rave or talk to a guest or something on my own. So I expect you guys, plus I'm paying for 50 phone lines, all right? So I expect you guys to be calling in and to be giving me the benefit of your knowledge. I'm certainly not all-seeing and all-knowing and all-knowledgeable. Believe me, I'm far from it. So one of the reasons that I do the show and ask you to call in is because I want you to tell me. I want you to tell me what the answer is. How are we going to fix this? How are we going to make this right? Now, certainly, one of the main things you can do is to make sure that you're watching what your representatives are doing. Now, I know that they make it difficult because you go to your particular congressman or senator's website and you look at their voting record, or you look at the bills that are being manufactured, and they make them now sometimes so hard to understand or so complicated, and sometimes intentionally deceptive, and it's sometimes hard to see what they're saying. But you got to try. You got to go and you got to look and see what your representatives are doing. Find out what they're doing and why they're doing it. And then you have to talk to your representatives. You have to talk to them and make sure that they know what your desires are for them, what your job expectations are for them. I always tell folks that I always try and give the representatives the benefit of the doubt. To try and think of it that perhaps they don't know what they're supposed to be doing. And if that's the case, then certainly they need my input. They need me to tell them what I think that they should be doing. So I'll do that. I'll do that because they're probably just waiting for me to tell them what the right thing to do is. So I'll do that. And then once you've done that, then you have to gauge on how well they listen to you. Now, this isn't a fast way to get things done. This isn't a fast way to fix things. But this is the way that our system is set up. By you voting for someone and electing someone to do a job for you. And then to pay attention to see if they've done that job. And then to act on that. If they're doing the right job, then by all means, support them, get them, try and do everything you can to get them reelected, vote for them. If they're not, get them out of there. That's the first thing you can do. Now, at Appleseed, we figure that that one of the main answers is getting folks, first of all, getting them off of the couch. Getting them off the couch, getting them out to the firing line so that they can improve their rifle marksmanship skills, but mainly so that we can talk to them about their obligation to the nation. And we do that by telling them about the sacrifices that were made for them on April 19, 1775. Because at that time, it was certainly and absolutely 1,000,000% less of a me nation and thought process than it is today. Then they were thinking about those who would come after.
Just shut up.
They were thinking about those who would come after. And they weren't thinking just about themselves. They were thinking about those who would come after. That's us. We came after them. And that makes the sacrifices that they made, it makes them for us. We tell the folks who show up at events about the sacrifices that were made for us so that we would have the nation that we have. And then we ask them to think about the vision that the founders had for this nation. And once they've thought about that, then to ask themselves if our nation seems like it's in line with the vision that the founders had for the nation. You know, I think that it's very easy to see that it's not. If we have to have years and years and years of arguing back and forth and fighting back and forth about the right to keep and bear arms, and what did they really mean? What did they really mean? Then obviously we're straying from the ideas that the founders had. What did they really mean? It was very obvious. They didn't have to really mean anything. They meant what they said. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. How you can get much more straightforward than that. And I'm sure that they didn't think that they would have to. They didn't think that the assault on our rights would be so constant and so wide-ranging that they would have to armor all of the rights any more than they did. They made things very simple in the very beginning. The Constitution of the United States of America lines out very clearly the powers of the government. It lists the powers of the government, and they're very few. They are very few for the powers of the federal government. The rest of the powers are supposed to rest in the hands of the state. But we've had a bit of an upside down here. And now we do see a pushback. I mean, we do see a pushback by the states, because you can see quite a few of the states are pushing back against the federal government. And you'll see this in the form. Now, it's nothing really that rock solid right now, but you'll see it in the form of states issuing bills of sovereignty. And you'll see it in the form of open letters and videos made. Declarations made by county sheriffs and their declarations that they will not enforce laws that are unconstitutional. Now, I was reading a report the other day of another sheriff saying it's not the duty of a sheriff to decide whether a law is unconstitutional or not. Well, I tell you, I disagree. I think that duty falls on the head of every single citizen in this nation. I don't think that you have to be a Supreme Court justice to decide if a law is unconstitutional or not. All you have to do is understand yourself, what you will and you won't put up with. Every time I think of this, I think of Jason Russell in his house. He was in his home on the road to Menotomy. And when he heard the regulars were out, he gathered up the folks that were living in his home, his family. He gathered them up and sent them away to safety. And they asked him to come. Now, he was an older gentleman, and they said he was a bit lame, and I'm not sure exactly what state of health he was in. Regardless, he wasn't going to go. And they said, why? Why are you staying here? He said, because an Englishman's home is his castle. He didn't have to be, he didn't need a Supreme Court justice to come to his home and tell him that he was doing the right thing or not. He could pretty much figure it out himself. He built a barrier on his front porch out of they said shingles, and of course at the time, you know, shingles were hand hewn out of logs. He took a steel fro and and usually a sledge or a hand sledge or the back of an axe, and you pounded the fro into the log that you had cross cut, that you'd sawn, and you split the shingles out of it. And so they ended up being, a lot of them, fairly thick. And he built a large barrier on his porch, and he sat there with his rifle. And apparently, when the regulars came to his home, he fired on them. And they ended up killing him and all of the other neighbors that happened to have stopped by or they were with him. They killed all of them. Now, am I telling you to build a barrier on your front porch and fire at the federal government? Absolutely not. Okay, let's make that perfectly clear. I'm not advocating any kind of violence, nor will I. I am telling you that you don't need somebody else to help you define what is right and wrong. Okay, guys, I'll give you the number again, 347-308-8790. 347-308-8790. We have the government currently making a huge to-do. Everybody experiencing their knee-jerk reactions to the shooting in Sandy Hook. Because, as I was telling you guys last week, that the government doesn't have a whole lot of options. Not only do they not have money and they have to take yours, they don't have a whole lot of other things that they can do. When a problem comes up, our lawmakers really only have one way that they know of that they can fix something. That's to make a law, because that's all they can do. That's all they're limited to doing, is to make a law. So when a problem comes up, that is what they feel they are responsible for doing to make a law. I told you, it's like a carpenter who has a tool bag. In that tool bag, all he has is a hammer. That's all he has. No saws, no chisels, no drills, nothing. Just a hammer. That's all he has. So to that carpenter, every single problem looks like a nail. Every single problem looks like it can only be fixed with a hammer. And it's the same way with our government. The only thing that they feel they can do is to make a law concerning the events in Sandy Hook. But I think that for the most part, I think that a lot of that is settling down now. I think that that even the Democrats remember that when they all signed on to the assault weapons ban, that it gutted them. And I don't know that any of them are that excited about going through that again. I think that a lot of folks had to make a lot of noise in order to make their constituents happy. But I don't think they had any real intentions of following through that. Now, sure, certainly a few of them did, and they always will. I'm talking about the Pelosi and Schumer and those folks that will never be happy until every single human on the planet, not just in America, but every single human on the planet is in some form or fashion bowing down to their authority. But for the most part, I think that a good number of the people up there have stopped sounding the horn on this. Now, all it would take is another problem for it to be started up again, but hopefully that won't happen. All right, let's take a caller here. We've got Daniel on the line. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scout. Thanks. Glad to be here.
Thank you, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a first-time listener, and obviously since first-time listener, first-time caller. I'm a U.S. Marine. I just left Okinawa, Japan, moved back here pending retirement. Kind of don't have to do anything right now except for look for a real job. And I've recently joined the forums and to get involved with Appleseed. I want to volunteer around the area and help out. Been watching for a few years and a firm believer in what you guys are doing.
Well, thank you, Daniel. Now, did you say that you retired? So, did you run a full 20?
No, did all the cutbacks. They're trying to, if you're an infantryman over the rank of staff sergeant and you've got over 15 years in, they were offering a early retirement. I happen to be a infantryman with over 16 years in, so I put in for it. They approved it. Here I am.
There you go. Well, that's fantastic. Well, listen, Daniel, thank you for your service. There are a lot of folks that serve, but there are a lot more that haven't. And nothing against the folks that have it. I've got no grief with them, but I'm just telling you that there's a big difference, I think, that folks who have served, especially when you've served and you put yourself in danger in order to defend our nation, I think that those folks have usually have a different perspective.
It's not only that we've defended it or risked life and lost friends in the process and everything. We've also seen other countries' way of life, the way they live through tyranny and oppression and everything else, and we don't want to see that here for our families.
Man, absolutely! I'm telling you, whenever you when you get off the plane in some third world nation and you're living there and the kids are lined up, they're lined up in outside the barracks or outside the fire base. When you come back in off a patrol because they know you're going to be cleaning your ruck out, getting all of when I was in, it was C-rations. But we know you're going to be getting all of your leftover food out. They're out there begging for it. And you see that the standard of living that the folks are going through. And then you see how damn cruel most of these governments are to their people. When you come back here, man, it is a whole different way of life. And the majority of folks don't see that. They take it for granted. They think that because we've had these freedoms forever, we always will have them. And that's absolutely not the case. Absolutely not the case.
Yeah, you made a good point there talking about how the government treats their children and the society as a whole. It's it's really surprising, you know, what you see that their military do, the police officers do, the local officials, the townspeople, everybody else, all the elders in the town, if you're talking some of the places where we're at right now, they don't care. It's just the way they are, it's people are subjects. They can steal from them. They can take from them. Extremely corrupt. And, you know, it's their rights. They have the same God-given rights that we do. They just don't happen to have the Bill of Rights that, you know, backs it up, I guess you could say. We have that. And right now, that's why I was calling in, is because they're really being threatened right now. The 1st, 2nd, 5th, 14th, they're tearing us up, you know. And you asked about a question about how, you know, what can we do about this? And I firmly believe in what you were talking about a little bit earlier, how we should contact our representatives and tell them how to vote, tell them how you stand on this issue as their constituent. I think that's your duty. It's not just your right or something that you can do. It's what you should do. It's what we should all do. But at the ground level, like you talk about, I'm not trying to give a plug here, but you probably have some listeners who might. I'm going to point them towards you. I do a host a podcast called Gunfighter Cast, and one of our recent episodes, we talked about just this subject, and it's not just about the Second Amendment. It's about rights in general. What we can do is we strike up a conversation at our kid's baseball game or soccer game with the person sitting next to us. We talk about rights. They're all being threatened. You know, there's no more due process anymore right now. We're seeing all kind of crazy stuff happening with the First Amendment. You can't even doctor a photo of the president. And obviously the attack on the Second Amendment right now that just has no backing whatsoever.
Absolutely. Well, I didn't realize you're from Gunfighter Cast. I download your program. I carry it with me in the tractor. You guys do a good job.
Oh, thank you. It's great.
And especially our soldiers right now. You know, they've gotten so hardcore on this. I'm fearful for all of the soldiers coming back because when you are serving the military and you have to go through rough times, it can leave a mark. And sometimes you need to talk to somebody about that. And if you're lucky enough to have some buddies around that you can talk to, then that's great. But sometimes it gets past that. Sometimes there's no good way to fix it. You need some help. And this now has turned into an issue where they're going to strip the Second Amendment rights from all of the soldiers who have any indication of PTSD, which is not a permanent, in most cases, it is not a permanent affliction, or it's certainly not one that should require the stripping of their rights. I know that whenever I was going to the VA a couple of years ago, they started diverting me into a room where I had to do an interview with one of the guys, and I swear he was not going to be satisfied until I told him I was having bad dreams and things were bad. There was no way I was going to fall in for that. I absolutely told him I absolutely no bad dreams, ever, never. And everything was peachy. But he did not want to hear that. It seems like they want to be able to declare soldiers as as possible problems and then strip them of their right to have firearms. And that's what they're trying to do now.
Yeah, I'm with you, Scott, or Scout. The I'm not usually one that wears a tinfoil hat, but I would say that us military combat multiple tours veterans are probably some of the hardest people to make subjects, and that's a good way to disarm people by going after the mental health aspect. Now, I've got some buddies that battle with a lot of PTSD issues, and they're the ones that if bullets are coming at me, I want them right next to me. I trust them more than anybody else. And every time there's a chance to go to Afghanistan, they're signing, they're like, I want to go. Get me out of here. I'm tired of being in the office. I want to go to Afghanistan. And these are the ones that are winning wars. These are the ones that are winning battles. These are great Americans. And some of them, my friends, they're afraid to go talk to people. They're afraid to go. They have issues. They have problems. They need some Ambien. They need to go talk to somebody and get some things off their chest. But they're afraid to do that because they're afraid they're going to lose their rights.
Yep. They're afraid of it now. And, and like you said, that's, you get into a strange kind of situation like that. And I know from my personal experience that, I remember I got 30 days leave and I got on the aircraft and man, I was home in, I don't know, 12 hours. From Panama, and I thought it was. I remember thinking it was awfully strange because I remember in the airport I was going like, "Oh, spread out! You guys are all bunched up in here," I ended up dumping my leave, and I came back a couple of weeks early because I just felt better being back than where I was. So I thought that was, I think that there are a lot of folks, like you're saying, there are a lot of folks that are rock solid. And like you said, I know quite a few folks that I would want beside me in a firefight, no matter what condition they were in, and certainly the problems that a lot of the soldiers are experiencing are not—they're not any different than the problems that anybody else experiences. I'm not talking about the situation that they came from. I'm talking about somebody losing a loved one or somebody. Being in a car accident and losing their family, or you know, the stress that puts on an individual is the same, regardless of how it came, where it came from. It's the same kind of thing. So for soldiers to be singled out, I think is criminal. But you're seeing this across the board. You're seeing the rights eroded across the board. Like you said, you've got if you can't even make a cartoon character. Of the president because you stand a good chance of getting a visit from somebody, then you know what's wrong. Anytime you look at things like McCain-Feingold, at the laws prohibiting folks from saying things about political candidates before an election. I'm absolutely dumbfounded that was allowed to go through. I mean, the right to free speech was made to cover that exact thing, to cover political speech, just because it also happens to cover urinating on crosses and burning the flag. Which, you know what, if they want to do that, that's fine. But just because it covers that, it's not that it was meant to. It was meant to cover political free speech so that you could say that the king was a bad king or the mayor was a bad mayor and not go to jail.
And it creates the fourth branch of the government, basically, which is the media, or what the media could have been if it didn't become what it is now.
That's it. And that is, of course, part of what the main thing I always wanted to speak about tonight, and that is the media's effect on our national will, on our will as a nation. Because the media has gotten completely out of control as far as it being an organization that is supposed to deliver the facts to you. It's no longer that. And I was reading an article just recently about Walter Cronkite's death, and how whenever he came on and he said that the war was lost, that was, to me, when you look back on it, that was like the beginning of the end. Instead of him reporting the facts, he came on as a trusted national individual and gave his opinion on it, and it was actually was a false premise, and the whole nation was wooed and swayed by what he said, and his editorial that he gave it represented a tremendous departure from the journalistic ethic of just reporting the facts. Now, certainly you had guys all along throughout history in the media giving their opinions and stuff, but for somebody as trusted and as a household name and a household figure as Cronkite, for him to give his opinion rather than just reporting objective facts was terrible. And the media has continued to do that now. And we live in an age of information overload. We've got way more information than we can ever process. And on top of that, you have folks who they are either too lazy or apathetic or unwilling to seek out the true information. They're willing to just lay on their backs and be bottle fed a solution of the media's current pablum, and to be poisoned by it, and to be led further and further into ignorance by it. And I don't know what the answer to that is. I don't know how you can fix something like that.
Well, you've got the you keep saying media. I consider myself media. I'm sure you consider yourself media, but we're obviously not the people that you're talking about right now. The media, we're talking about the mainstream. You turn on your TV, you're watching one of those garbage channels that have, you know, entertainment news or whatever they call it these days.
Well, you've got still the main channels, ABC, NBC, CBS, MSN. You have all these mainstream media channels that folks watch, and they take everything that is said on there as the absolute truth.
I think we're stronger. I think this new media, blogs, podcasts, blog talk radio, there are so many people tuning into this stuff right now. Gunfightercast is just taking off. We're getting crazy downloads that I'd never expected, just being a grunt, bought a microphone, thought nobody would listen. It's blown my mind what it's done. And been completely impressed by the type of people that are listening to, and they're sharing it. And Facebook, as crazy as it may sound, Facebook and Twitter are the key. Look what happens in Egypt or Libya or anywhere else where people start getting access to the internet that's somewhat unrestricted, and they start seeing, wow, people have freedom other places. You mean they can do this stuff and it's okay? They're seeing that through social media, and they're starting, you know what? Let's get that. Let's get that freedom, and let's do what we got to do to get it. And that's happening all around the world. And I said earlier, strike up conversation with the person next to you at the soccer game. It could be a responsible, and I say responsible, but also maybe even gentle. That's responsible and gentle post on Facebook. Not something crazy like, my guns are not going to be documented, or I'm ready to go to violence or something ridiculous like that
right
now.
Right.
Something responsible, and point them to a show like yours or a show like mine or some of the other people out there who are putting out some good information and some solid statistics and solid stuff. We can go to the DOJ, FBI, we can go to CDC and get statistics that back up our guns, that back up us good guys having guns all day long. There's never going to be anything that comes out that says that we shouldn't own guns because they're dangerous. They cannot prove that. The liberals who are supposedly somehow guarding science, and they're like the guardians of the scientific method, they just completely refuse to acknowledge every ounce of evidence that is in our favor, because it all is. But we have to point to people who they don't know any better, especially in our inner cities. They don't know any better. They know that gangbangers have guns and cops have guns and people shouldn't have them. We've got to re-educate in a way that shows them the reality of this is what's really going on. This is what they're really for. It's not some crazy, living in a bunker. You know, we've got guns for this reason. I've got a wife and kids. You probably heard my son, my 2.5-year-old, making noise, a little bit added content for your show. That's why I do it. You know, that's why I carry every day, because I don't want them to be without me, and I couldn't bear to be without them.
Well, I believe that you're absolutely right. I think that I also believe that that's part of the divide, and that is you do have a lot of folks who are seeking out the information, and it is easier now. You don't have to accept what is on mainstream media, and that includes stuff like Fox and stuff like that, because they don't have any kind of I would consider them just as much mainstream media as ABC, CBS, or NBC. If you want the truth, you're going to have to go look for it, and because of things like the internet, now we do have a way to go and seek it out. And you're right, there's absolutely there's a tremendous amount of information out there that you can find, but that's also part of the information overload, because folks can only take in so much information. I know that whenever I start digging on Facebook or Twitter or something like that, I'll look up and, you know, I'm dropped into a black hole, and I'll pop back out 4 hours, 5 hours later, because I'm trying to take in the information that's being made available to me there. But that's me, and a lot of people don't do that. They sit on the couch, and television comes on and says, okay, do you think that guns that kill people should be banned? And they go, oh, yeah, I think that's a good idea. And they've never touched a firearm. And that's one of the things that that the Appleseed Project tries to do, and that is trying to get the young shooters out on the line, because if you have, and I don't know how you were raised, but for me, you know, I grew up rurally, and I've been shooting ever since I can remember, and it wasn't just me, it was everybody I knew, so everybody did. Now, I still live rurally, but the kids now that are in the schools and stuff, the majority of them, they've never touched a firearm. They don't know anything about it. That means that whenever they turn 18 and they're asked to vote on something, on some firearms issue, they don't have a dog in that hunt. It's neither here nor there to them. Perhaps they think that the government should be the only ones that have firearms. They don't know.
This concerns me the most right there. Exactly. That's the perfect point. You know, you said, I'm guessing you're a little bit older than me, Scout. Whenever I grew up, I would go out hunting by myself with a firearm, a rimfire, at the age of about 9-10 years old. And I would graduate up to higher calibers as I got older. My friends, that was crazy that I had a 12 gauge, you know, pump shotgun in my closet. And ammo in my closet as well. My friends would come over and think that's insane, because their parents would never let them do that. So I think what we're seeing is it dwindling down just a little bit from your generation maybe to my generation, or the time frame there. Right now, I'm so worried that I shot my first IDPA match this past weekend, and I was really looking at the age, the demographic there, and there was very few people there younger than me. I'm 32 years old, and I would say maybe out of everybody there, I would say maybe four people, maybe five, and there was probably a good 100, 150. And that worried me because we're all active right now. I'm active. Some of those people there are not active. You're active. But what happens whenever, you know, Gunner, my 2.5-year-old, whenever he's 18, is he going to be by himself in this fight? Who's going to be here to defend our rights, not only the Second Amendment, but our rights in general? We got to educate our kids, you know, and teach them the right way to stand and not believe what they're being taught in the public school system. But here's the reality. Here's what it is. And here are the facts to back it up and never accept anything else.
Right. Right. And I, you know, I see the same thing. I mean, and I am seeing a lot of younger folks, like at Appleseed and stuff. But for the most part, when if I were to call on a group of Appleseed patriots to form up, you would probably be down on the very bottom of the age list, and it would run up to like 75 or 80. And there's a gap that's growing now. That's with the younger generation. So we're trying to do everything we can to get them on the line and to get them to understand not just firearms. Now, at Appleseed, we've got an absolutely fantastic safety program too. So that's one of the benefits, is they get a rock solid foundation in rifle and firearm safety. But for them to understand why they're there on the line and why they have the right to do so is just as important. And that's what the Appleseed Project tries to do. And that's what I try and make known to the folks that I speak to. And I haven't really come across that many of the rabid anti-gun folks. Believe me, I know that they're out there. But in my daily life, I haven't come across that many. But like I said, I live in Central Texas, and I live rurally, and it's just not there. I just don't hit those circles very often. But there are a huge number of folks out there that would be more than willing to limit our rights. And not just that right, but you've got people willing to limit every single right, especially in knee-jerk situations.
Yeah, they always want to blame too much liberty. That's always the problem, right?
That is. Isn't that? That is a very horrible problem. That is too much liberty, too much freedom. And
I'm sorry. If I may, on the next generation, you know, getting them in the fight, you know, I'm curious what you think about this and some solutions that we could give the audience. What do you think we could do to help to get more young adults and teenagers out there, more parents bringing their children to these things, whether it's competition shooting or Appleseed or whatever you're doing? I think it all plays a good part. We're just going to a range and shooting, realizing that this can be a lot of fun. And it's good, you know, parent-child time. It's awesome. You can't beat it. And I remember a lot of fond memories I have with just me and my father shooting, or me and my father and his friends out shooting and, you know, hunting and stuff. It's some great time. The grandfather that's not here anymore. That's some of my best memories of them. And we should do that with our children. But I understand, I was talking this weekend with Masad Ayoub and John Strayer and a few other people down in that are in that area, the Pro-Arm shooting team, if you're familiar with them. They also have a podcast. And, you know, I brought this up about let's get these people out shooting. Let's get some more kids. Let's get some more teenagers. Let's get some young adults over there, some 18-year-olds, 17-year-olds out there shooting. And, you know, I didn't even think about this. And I'm, you know, a Marine. I'm clearly not wealthy. But money is a huge issue. And what I was thinking was, you know, maybe some kind of, like, let's adopt a shooter. Like, hey, I work with this guy who's 20 years old. He's thinking about buying a pistol when he turns 21. I can spot him a little bit of ammo. Even in these hard times, I can give him 100 rounds to go shoot the match with me this weekend. and let him borrow one of my pistols and teach him some safety, teach him everything else. Now, once he's educated, he's going to teach somebody else safety. It's going to be passed along, and that's going to grow. But also, he's going to go have an awesome time shooting a match. And then he's going to be like, you know what? This is a lot of fun. I never even thought I could do this, never thought I could do. Now, instead of going out and blowing my money somewhere else, I can go buy a firearm, use it for this fun sport, and also have it for defensive reasons as well to protect my family. And you just got a new person that just became an activist in defending our rights. And that's all we need to do. If we keep doing that and we keep touching other people around us, what we can touch, let's not go too far outside of our box. But if you can touch somebody, let's do that, you know, and help them out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's the only way it's going to work is on a local, a local ground level thing like that. Because and we do the same thing, like I said, at Appleseed. I can't tell you how many times that the kids have shown up and they've got their iPods and they got their earphones in and they're sitting in the chair and you can tell that they're just miffed that they have to be there with mom and dad. And they will try and sit back and play their games or something, but we'll finally get them onto the line and we'll get them to start shooting. And then by the end of the day, I ask folks who will be back for tomorrow. Well, the Appleseed courses are 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. Okay, who's going to be back for tomorrow? And because I want to see how many people to plan on, how many instructors on these, stuff like that. And the people that raise their hands, and that kid who was there with their sunglasses and their iPod on, they were miffed at having to be there. They're popping up and down. They're looking at their parents saying, can we come back? Can we come back? And the parents are like, we only signed up for one day because we didn't figure, we figured by then, you know, the kid would be, would be screaming. And I tell them, I said, well, come on back. Just come back. And the kid comes back and shoots another day. And I can tell you that, because I know, because the kids have told me, later, that this has been a life-changing experience for them, not just because they came and shot and learned how to shoot, which is a pretty important thing even in the life of a kid, but because usually when kids show up at events, we will separate the kids from the parents, at least as far as instruction. We don't want the parents trying to give the kids instruction because we don't want the parents saying, you're not doing it right, and we don't want the kids saying, yes, I am, because that didn't go anywhere. So what we do is we'll usually separate the parents and the kids, and then the instructors will take over teaching the kids. And, of course, I always tell the instructors, I said, you're going to teach them as a young adult, not as a kid. You're going to teach them as a young adult. And in many cases, this may be the very first time that these kids have been treated in a fashion like this, and that they have been not among peers, but they've been treated as if they were among peers at an event, and they've learned to do something and been treated as young adults by the staff, and it has it's changed their lives. Like I said, because I know because they've written me letters or emailed me and told me that it changed their lives. And that is one of the things that we need to be doing. Just like you said, you see somebody that's doing the right thing. You see them that they want to get involved in something. And certainly it's much easier to reinforce good behavior or good technique than it is to try and retrain. So if you can reinforce that, if you can, like you said, if you can tell somebody, hey, listen, you know, you say you want to get involved with that, you want to get involved, then here's a box of 50 rounds, and shoot this, get the practice and the training you need for it, or get the kids at the Appleseed, and we usually give the kids a youth patch, as long as they did everything good. So we don't give the patch to whiners.
Yeah, no crybabies.
And it reinforces it. Yeah, listen, we actually came across some of these. I'm not gonna really elaborate that much on it, but I will tell you that.
Yeah, stay positive, Scott, because you got me motivated right now. You know, I really wanted. That's why I joined the forums, because I wanted to get into the local area and get into it. And that example you just gave, it brings me back to times when I was teaching recruits at Parris Island as a primary marksmanship instructor. And these are 18, 17, 19-year-old kids most of the time. And you could see it on their faces. And every Friday, you get on qual day, you get to see your work, and you get to see how well they progress, and they get to see what they accomplished for going from nothing to hitting bullseyes at 500 yards. And it's an awesome feeling for them and the instructor as well. That's I want to get into it. I want to help you guys out. I've got to run, actually, Scout. I apologize. But
before you go, real quick, give out your address. Because now, are you with Gun Rights Radio?
No, we're not with Gun Rights Radio Network anymore. But that's a great organization and awesome podcast with the Gun Rights Radio Network. You can find them at gunrightsradio.com. We're actually went over to Blanchard Media Group. That's Ken Blanchard. It's with the Urban Shooter podcast. He started a media group, and we joined him. Great guy. You may also know him as the Black Man with a Gun.
Okay.
He's a pastor, gun-toting, black man with a gun. That's what he refers to himself as.
Okay,
he's a great guy.
If folks want to get listen to your podcast, and I'll tell you guys, Daniel has a great they have a great show that they do. Like I said, I get it through iTunes, so I can download it and take it with me on the track. You guys have a great show. If they want to find you, they can go to...
You can go to www.gunfightercast.com, listen to the web, or you can search for Gunfightercast on iTunes. If that doesn't work for you, we've got an app on the iTunes App Store and Android Marketplace. You can listen to all those different methods. And, Scott,
okay.
If there's anything we can do for you, John McGregor, my co-host, if we can do anything for you or Appleseed, please don't hesitate to let us know.
Okay, careful, because I'm going to take you up on that.
I'm gay.
Okay. Thank you, Daniel. Have a good night, and we'll be glad to hear from you. Anytime you want to call in, you're always welcome.
Great. Thanks. Had a good time. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Daniel Shaw with Gunfighter Cast. Like I said, they've got a great show. I tell you that I have to rely on podcasts because I can't get any kind of a reception or anything, especially not in the tractor, especially if I'm in a cab tractor. I guess all the steel just kills it. I'm out in the middle of nowhere, so I can't get any. So I have to rely on podcasts, and there are thousands of them out there. Heck, Blog Talk alone has, 600,000 radio shows at any given time, which, by the way, we're always out of those however many 100,000 shows there are out there, or tens of thousands. The Rothman Radio Show, thanks to you guys, is always in the very top. We're always... in the top 10, if not number one in our category, which is politics conservative. And we're usually in the top 100 out of all shows on Blog Talk. Like I said, at any given time, I know that there's at least maybe 600,000 with too many, but there's at least 60 or 70,000 shows, and we stay in the top 10. So thank you. Thank you guys for that, because... because I sure don't listen to the show. anyway, it is hard to find a podcast to listen to. It's hard for me to find one because I want something good. I want something that can occupy me or that I can learn from. And it's hard to find any good podcasts out there. There's a lot of them. There's not all that many that are good ones, at least not for me, okay? If you like Bigfoot or aliens or something like that, then you would probably be really impressed with a lot of the podcasts, but I don't. I know that my business partner, Mark, he really likes the aliens and Bigfoot and Chupacabra and stuff like that. So I know that he likes listening to those. Of course, I'm just kidding. But it's hard to find a good podcast. So I'd welcome you guys to take a listen to Gunfighter's podcast. And I want to thank you guys for listening to me, because you guys are listening a lot more all of a sudden. And, you know, when he was talking about that earlier, over the last year, the downloads of Rathman Radio have really taken off, where I might get 300 or 400 downloads of an episode a year and a half ago. I now get 3,000 or 4,000 downloads of an episode. So I'll get between 12 or 15 and 20,000 or even 30,000 downloads in a month now on Rathman Radio. So that certainly is due to you guys. Okay, our calling number is 347-308-8790. 347-308-8790. Now, we talked about the media. And let me make that clear again, too, because Dan brought up a good point. That you're listening to the media right now, at least a form of it. And I was talking about the mainstream media, and the problems that they cause. Because I'll tell you, if ever there is difficulty, especially if it's racial, something like that, the mainstream media loves to stoke those fires. I think that the majority of the problems we have in this nation, at least racially, I think a good portion of them can be tracked back to mainstream media. Because if there's ever anything that happens, anything, even the slightest thing that can be construed as any type of racial motivated crime or racial equality problems, something like that, the mainstream media will move that to the top of the list, and they will run that tire flat on the rim. And they will generate hatred, and they will generate malevolence in doing so. And so to what end? Well, if they don't have evil intent, I'm not saying that they do, but if they don't have evil intent, the only other thing it could be is to generate listeners, because listeners are what the revenue that they get is from commercials and advertising. So more listeners equals a larger revenue from advertising. So the majority of the news programs now are advertising driven. They need to generate listeners, not just put out the facts to whoever is listening. They have to generate listeners. And there's a difference between the two things. So we know that the media is complicit in a lot of the problems that we're having. Now, just like Dan said, and what I was telling you earlier, you're going to have to make sure that you're seeking out the information, that you are looking for the answers yourself. So you can do that in many ways. Don't just take the Don't just take the stuff that's given to you by mainstream media, all right? Because now there are plenty of other ways that you can get the information. And the easiest way is just to go to your computer. Everybody has one now. Go to your computer, plug in the information, and then read what is said about it. I mean, that's the easiest thing to do. Don't ever take, along with the media, you know, now we have these email blasts that come out. You've got spam and everything else in advertising, but you've got plenty of the emails out. And folks, I'm sure the majority of the folks think that they're doing you a favor. They're doing you a favor by sending this alert out to their hundreds of friends all at once. Government is trying to do such and such right now. Forward this message immediately. And when I get one like that, if I haven't already seen it 5,000 times, the first thing I do is I strip out the title, cut and paste it into the web browser, and hit submit. And then that will provide me with a multitude of different options that I can read about to see what the true story is. And 9 times out of 10, it's nothing. It's false. It's a frenzy that I don't know why people would purposely start that unless it's just something that has sometimes these emails are generated and they end up living a life of their own, just flowing back and forth through the internet, through the emails. You'll get emails saying that you have to act now. You have to act now to stop this right now. And you'll find out that the particular subject that they're talking about was from a bill from 1998, 1999, 2001, a decade ago. So obviously it doesn't have to be that immediate, right? There's nothing you have to do that fast if you're getting an email that's already 12 years old. So take 1 second before you hit that forward button to all your friends. Take 1 second, strip out the title, pop it into the media, into your web browser, and read what it says. Read what it says about it. If you're watching the television and it says House Bill XYZ getting ready to be voted on this next week, grab your pencil and paper, write down House Bill XYZ, put it in your browser, and then read about it. Find out what it is. Don't take somebody's word on the TV saying this is a bill that's going to do such and such. This is a bill that is going to change the tires on your car and grease your universal joint. All right? So everybody needs to vote for it. Read the bill yourself. Read what it says. There's no substitute for that. Ignorance is the thing that's killing us. Ignorance and apathy. I would read about that, but I don't know. What does it matter? What does it really matter what the government's doing? I don't have any say in it. Well, you'd have some say if you read about it and then you knew what to vote on, because so many people simply hit the, when they go into the voting booths, they simply hit whatever it is that their party wants them to hit, and that's it. The next thing I want to talk about is our current problems with the borders, for our nation, and how this is going to play out. Now, before I do that, let me take another caller, because I don't want to get too far off the subject. And this is Cal. Cal, welcome to the show.
Cal. Yeah, well, I may take you off the subject, and I'd like to move on to the border subject that you're going to pitch. But, you know, last week we talked to Stewart, and we talked about the pledge drive. And, you know, if we could spend a few minutes here, I'm very surprised that we don't have an effective pledge drive to take pledges of resistance, much like Stewart's pledge. You know, I went to the site. It was very difficult to find. I went to the page that he spoke of. And, you know, I just don't think it's working very well. You know, I've been monitoring it for a week. I've had people sign it. I don't think it's updating. I don't think it knows how to add. It has a pathetic number of contributions. Can you imagine a pledge of resistance signed by 100,000 to a million people? I mean, we should be able to achieve that. Can you imagine the power of such a thing? Again, I really personally, you know, having voted in what, 7 presidential elections or I don't know, whatever, and only seeing the degradation of liberty in my lifetime, I'm looking for new approaches. And this seems like a new approach. You know, if every member in all 3 branches of government received notice of a million pledges of resistance, I think that's going to have more impact than, you know, begging and pleading with you as a constituent with, you know, with your elected Congress critter or master or ruler, as I call them. So what do you think? What does it take to get this going? I got a lot on my plate in my life right now, but, man, I would like to see this take off.
Well, now, are you talking about first let me say that everybody's going to have a different experience with their representatives. You know, some are going to be helpful. Some are going to go to bat for them, and some aren't. So you can't say that it's a across the board thing that talking to your senators, congressmen isn't going to help. Because in many cases it can, and not just because they want to do the right thing. Because most of them, I don't know how much they really care about that. What they want is to do the thing that will get them reelected. Okay, and if you tell them that doing a certain thing will cause you to vote for somebody else, no matter what else goes on, that's a pretty effective way of trying to leverage them. But I don't see that it is.
I really don't. I think that there are far more influential people than the power of voters. And then when you discount the number that are brainwashed due to the media problems that, you know, you just cited, you know, in the last 10 or 20 minutes, you know, there just really aren't that many free and willful minds. But, you know, that isn't really the purpose of my introducing this topic again. You know, I could also actually argue moral problems that I have with voting. I have a morality, and again, I don't want to go there. It's philosophy. And I'd certainly never tell somebody not to call their congressman and urge them to, you know, act or vote one way or another. I'm not doing that. I want to do more. And for people that are doing those things, fine. Keep on doing them. You may slow the degradation of liberty. You're not going to stop it. You're not going to reverse it. You're just going to slow it. So, you know, I think, though, on this particular issue, we need to take a stronger stand, to quote the slogan, you know, that the NRA just pitched, stand and fight. And that is not a sort of a, you know, a political tone that they're, you know, obviously it's a political organization, but that they're, you know, they're promoting in this campaign slogan. And I think along with that, I think everyone should be put on notice that they're in a position of power, you know, not necessarily.
Well, now,
just this.
Are you talking about a site that you are engineering or one?
No.
Or were you talking about one that Stuart was engineering?
Well, somebody at Oath Keepers did engineer one. It just isn't working. And I have had some contacts that think I have a great idea, but nobody's really launched it effectively. I got the idea when I read Stuart's personal pledge of resistance on the Oath Keepers site, which I think is an excellent pledge. Not only does he take a very unambiguous stand, but he also cites his reasons for pledging resistance. It's excellent. I've been referencing it high and low on the Internet. Well, you know, I thought that we really should have a site where other persons can take a similar pledge, or perhaps a, you know, a canned pledge for those that don't really want to draft their own, and sign, and sign, as Stuart points out, anonymously or with your own John Hancock. They both have value. So Stuart last week pointed me to a site, or I should say a web page, on the Oath Keepers site that was designed for this purpose. That, you know, it's not just for law enforcement and military and former military personnel and law enforcement personnel. It's for anyone. So I went to the site to take the pledge. A bunch of my contacts and people in my network online have also signed it. But, you know, there are 2,500 pledges on it, and the number's not growing. And it doesn't even seem to be accruing the number of the people that have signed it since I became aware of it. It's very difficult to find. It's there, but it's not attracting anybody. I think, you know, we should be able, we, by that I mean, you know, liberty-minded people willing to step up and, you know, and contribute some effort to this cause, we should be able to get a website up that garners, as I said, hundreds of thousands or millions of pledges of resistance from individuals, similar to the one that Stuart personally posted, which is fairly easy to find on the Oath Keepers website. I don't know, does it make sense, or, you know,
It does, but now, I guess I would also have to ask, you know, say you had a site up, and the site said, I'm going to resist, or, you know, something like that, then I got to ask, what does that really do either? Because all it is just a list of folks saying that they're going to resist. I mean, it's not an active
No, it's very active. It puts people in power on notice that there may be consequences to their action of putting ink to paper and disarming people. There will be consequences. Have you read Stuart's personal pledge?
I would
direct you to Stuart's personal pledge, and you know, maybe then, you know, we could continue this discussion at a later date. But if you've not read it, it is well worth reading. And you know, I think similarly, many liberty-minded people would be willing to take such a pledge in public, either by name as Stuart has done, or even anonymously. And Stuart, On the web page that was intended to collect public signatures, he explains how an anonymous signature is also very powerful because it creates a tip of an iceberg. There are the known pledges at the tip, but how much mass lies below that tip? How much power lies below that tip, you know, of John Hancock's that have merely signed anonymously?
Right. Now, are you talking about the general pledge?
Well, I don't know if that's what it's titled. It's on the page that is, I think, titled. I can probably find it fairly quickly here and put it in the chat. But it's on the Milan Levay page.
The Pledge to Resist Disarmament and Registration.
Yeah, I'm still trying to find it. As I said, it's even their search engine doesn't really direct us. It's easy to find his. Let me try to find there. The general pledge. And they also are going to have, apparently they have links to pages that they intend to collect from, you know, also from individuals in the military and LE professions. However, those aren't up and running. But you can certainly sign the general pledge as well.
It's at oathkeepers.org/oath/pledge/. And it has the pledge there, and it has the other one, the gun owners, military, peace officers, veterans.
Right.
Pledges
that's
that
it.
Are coming soon. Right.
At the top of the page it says, we will never disarm. We will never surrender our military pattern semi-automatic rifles with full capacity magazines, parts, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, again, I think that this is an effective message. I think it's more effective than just saying, oh, please, I want you to vote one way or another. It's drawing more of a line in the sand, you know that there are consequences.
But at the same time, you're saying there's a line in the sand, but they have to cross that line for you to do anything. And it's then whenever you talk to your representatives, you're not saying, oh, please vote this way. You're saying, look, I would like you to represent.
No, I think this does more. I think it does as much as politicking your representative, because that does nothing at all. I mean, really, in my opinion, and even in your world, you know, all it is a letter urging them to do one thing or another. I mean, this is urging them.
That's not all it is.
This is urging them
because
just as much.
If they don't do it, then you don't vote for them. And we've seen this.
Well,
we've seen it happen over and over, and that is when the representative did not do what their constituents wanted, they got voted out. And
certainly anyone who reads this pledge knows how the people are going to vote, too. explicitly saying I urge you also, you know, implies a vote one way or the other. You can't explicitly claim, you know, to withhold votes, but again, you know, that's just ink on paper, and it will never be more than ink on paper. This here is ink on paper, but it's pledging action. So,
I tell you what, I've been around quite a while, and I can tell you right now that that I know plenty of folks who are willing to put ink on paper, and it means absolutely nothing to them. So,
well, that's true.
And I'm sure most of the representatives know that too. We've got
tens of
thousands of people who will stand out in the street, and they'll shake their fist, and they'll say, "Pride from my cold, dead hands." And they'll be the first ones running. And I got to tell you, if I can't get somebody to call their representative and tell them what they need from their representative and then to vote that person in or out, then there's no way in Hades that I would count on them to be standing on the line somewhere refusing to turn in their firearms. I just don't see it. I mean,
yeah, well, I see every argument that you make against the pledge drive, every element of it applies equally to, just writing your congressman. See, I do not see that writing your congressman offers any advantages over this, personally, because this will be seen by your congressman as well. Of course,
here's the advantage, is that every 2 years or every 4 years, I go into the voting booth, and I either vote them back in or I vote them back out. So there's the advantage right there.
Well,
the,
you don't.
Writing your name to a paper.
Your vote makes no difference whatsoever. You don't. Your vote makes no difference. It is one vote. I have yet to see an election that's turned by one vote. An individual doesn't make any difference whatsoever. And in fact,
can I throw the dimes worth in here?
Yeah, go ahead, Sam. Jump in.
And Cattle, this is co-host. What I'd like to say is that maybe if you are this hot on having a pledge drive, why don't you start one?
There you go.
Well, I'm actually working on that, but the problem is I don't have a high visibility website. And
you don't need
it would
to have
be very
a high
unlikely
website.
That I ever would have one.
Cal, mm-hmm. You don't have to have a high visibility website.
Stuart didn't have
a high visibility
website when he started.
Yeah, well, that's true. But, you know, we don't have that much time. We have at most a few months here. At most, we need to ramp it up quickly, and the best way to do that would be to piggyback on a site that's well known and get some traffic and is hopefully relevant to the cause of liberty in other ways. And I think the Oath Keeper site is such a site. It's just I'm disappointed that this pledge page, you know, doesn't seem to be really easy to access. It doesn't actually even seem to be functioning because
Are you publicizing it? I am.
Yeah, and many people have signed it, and the counter isn't even incrementing. So I know people are pledging, and the counter's not incrementing. And, in fact, my last comment was which was well over a week ago, it was a week ago, is when Stuart was on. My comment there is the last one to update. Certainly there have been other comments. So anyhow, I have actually posted on the General Oath Keepers website, asking – what's the reason behind this? If you're going to host a site, let's make it one that we can promote and one that can do us some good. So.
Well, I tell you, I got to tell you too that I've talked to Stuart and I'm familiar with the idea behind this, and the whole idea of Oath Keepers is not signing the pledges or saying the pledges, etc. It's not to generate a number of names that you can present before the government to intimidate them, because there's no way that they're ever going to be intimidated by any number that you put up there. It doesn't matter. The whole idea is to make sure that the information is getting out there and that people are thinking about it, that it's causing individuals to think about what they would do when it came down for them to make a choice between enforcing an unconstitutional or unlawful order and not. So that's the whole idea about it. I don't know that they're that worried about having a huge number of folks so they can present that number in front of anybody. I think it's just making sure that we're getting the individuals to think about this beforehand. I mean, that's the whole point of Oathkeepers, is getting people to think about what they're going to do beforehand, not as a number to threaten the government with.
Well, I think it's both. I think that people do find it threatening, or we wouldn't have politicians and government, you know, labeling. I'm not sure that they've ever been explicitly labeled as domestic terrorists, but they're certainly nibbling around the edges, as they have with, you know, people with Ron Paul bumper stickers and whatnot. So certainly the numbers are a factor, and you're absolutely correct. The knowledge that is imparted on servicemen and service people is also terribly important, as you said. I agree. It is very important to make them aware of their oath and the ramifications of the oath. So, yeah, I think it's both, or they wouldn't even have this this page up here. And if you read Stewart's notes about the page, it's clear that he is interested in obtaining a mass, because I'll quote from the page, "It's necessary for there to be a visible tip of the Patriot iceberg, so the domestic enemies know we are serious, to know that we are everywhere, both in the ranks of the current serving and among the population. It is always good to have a large mass under the surface that is harder to quantify and harder to attack." I won't go on, but clearly Stewart has an interest in the aspect of, you know, the non-educational aspect, the aspect that I'll just refer to as drawing the line in the sand.
Right. Well, I hope that you go through with this and you get your that you get this up and running, and if you do, be sure and give us a call and let us know where it is and the info and how to get to it, and we'll be glad to take a look. We've got quite a few listeners.
Yeah, I sure will. That's why I'm here. You know, I first want to try to see if the Oathkeeper site, you know, could use some help. If, you know, what can we do to promote it? But if it looks like, you know, maybe it's not the best avenue for the job, then yeah, I have I've been in contact with people from other liberty organizations, and yeah, we may need to get one up there ourselves. Just give it a shot ourselves.
Well, do that, and then let me know, because like I said, we'll be more than happy to put the information out to our listeners here and see if we can give it a jump start.
Sounds good. Thanks, Cal.
Okay. Well, listen, Cal, thanks for calling in. You're always welcome to call in, and good luck on your project.
Thank you. Always in liberty.
All right, buddy.
Talk to you later, Cal.
Thank
Bye.
You. Bye-bye. Okay. We've got Jared. Hold on just a minute, Jared. I'm going to bring you on in just a second, but I want to make sure that I get this information out, and that is the Battle Road, USA.com is with the end of the world as we know it, zombie destruction run is coming up in 2 weeks, and we want to make sure that you guys know about it, and that it's 2 weeks and there's still some tickets left. We'd love to have you guys out. You go to battleroadusa.com and click on the zombie information there. And, you know, we're not zombie fanatics, but it seems like there's a lot of interest in zombies right now. And I don't know if that's so that folks can feel good about going out and shooting something like a zombie, because there's no repercussions to that. It's morally correct and everything else. Regardless, it doesn't matter to me, because if I can put some zombie targets up and that will cause people to come out and train, then I'm all for it, okay? I'm all for it. And if you want to go through station, I guess I think it's station 4, you want to go through station 4 and go through the woods, in that station it's called Finding Sophia, and you want to try and find Sophia and knock out the dozen zombies that that are after you in the woods there, then by all means, do so. Come and do it. Like I said, it's in 2 weeks. We already ordered the shirts. The shirts are absolutely fantastic. I want to thank Kirk Wheeler, Spitsticker, for the job he did on them. Kirk came through on the shirts. Hey, Kirk is an absolutely fantastic graphic artist. He works for Pragmatics. I think that's the right way to say it. And I say he works for him. He's one of the owners of Pragmatics. And he does an absolutely fantastic job. When he's not doing the work for Verizon or General Motors and stuff like that, he's doing the work for the Appleseed Project. And he created all the billboards across the nation. He created the trifolds and everything else. And then whenever we can squeeze time out of him, he does stuff like knock this out, some T-shirts and logos and stuff like that. He did a great job on the T-shirts, all right? You look at the Battle Road USA Facebook page. We got them posted up there. They look really great. Now, we only ordered, I think, about 100 of them. So if you guys want some of those shirts, you got to come. You get a free shirt with your ticket, which and the shirts ate up about how many did they eat up? About 15 or 20 runners' fees already, and you get barbecue dinner with it. And we've got the folks from Tannerite are going to be coming out. And they're going to be putting on a demo. They're going to have a table set up, so you can buy Tannerite and talk to them about it during the run if you're not running. And then after the last runner comes in, we start tabulating the scores and stuff. They're going to put on a demo. It's about 45 minutes to an hour demo. It's going to teach you guys how to use Tannerite, and they're going to blow up a bunch of stuff, including a bunch of zombies and stuff like that that they're going to blow up. And you can purchase the Tannerite from them there. We also got several sponsors. We've got we want to thank GunBroker.com. They sponsored us. Also, Roughneck Firearms, I believe they're in Houston, are sponsoring us. And who else? We've got several folks that are sponsoring us. Stuart Rose and Oath Keepers sent out a bunch of gear, stickers and DVDs and stuff like that, and like I said, GunBroker said a bunch of stuff, and it's going to be the event will not be the big circus that we were thinking about because we're like driving this thing with the brake, with one foot on the brake, one foot on the gas, because we weren't sure this is our first run and gun rodeo that we were in charge of, so we're kind of driving it careful. Next year, it's going to be an absolute blast, okay? Regardless, if you want the first annual T-shirt from the Zombie Run, if you want to be one of the first annual runners of the Run and Gun here at Battle Road, you're going to have to go get your tickets right now at battleroadusa.com. And there's also a blog that will give information, and we've got all the other vendors and the information and stuff there too, and that is Battle Road USA, and the letters spell out End of the World as We Know It, Zombie Destruction. Battle Road USA, GOTWAWKIZB. All right, that's the zombie blog. Okay, so I ate up most of your time. Jared, I'm going to bring you on. Jared, come on. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hey. How you doing?
Yep, you are here. We got about 2 minutes, but yeah,
okay,
I'll give you
great.
All 2 minutes.
Great. Thank you. I am a big fan of Gunfighter Cast. That's why I am listening to this for the first time. And I was prompted by your last caller because I totally agree with what he's saying. The way I see it is, you know, we're at a point right now where we've kind of, you know, almost begged and pleaded our representatives to represent us as gun owners. And it seems to be, in some instances, falling on deaf ears. and I agree with what he's saying. I think we need to have a presence. We need to have a voice, and you know, to be shown, to show them that this, how many people think the way that we do, and that we are a force, and we have to have a line in the sand and say, you know, you won't, you know, to quote the whole, you know, thou shalt not pass, you know what I mean?
Right.
This is where it ends. And, you know, I agree we should try the diplomatic, you know, ways and reasons, but at a certain point we need to just kind of stand firm and go, no, no more, you know? We don't care if you're, you know, if you agree with us or not. This is who we are. This is how many people we have, and this is our line, and that's it.
Well,
and
I agree with you there. And I believe that, like I said, I'm not against any. Listen, let me tell you guys real quick. We're about to lose the live feed on here. I'm going to keep talking to Jared as long as he wants to talk. But I want to tell the rest of you guys that we're about to leave. You guys can hear this in the archives, that I appreciate everybody coming out tonight and listening. We'll see you next Thursday night, all right? Okay. So, Jared, I agree with you. I'm more than willing to do anything possible. But I got to tell you that I think that the same thing would occur if the million people that are willing to sign this, if those million people were all split up and they all decided to start calling their representatives, then it would have even more of an effect than just a list saying, oh, this we had 1 million people sign this. And we know that this worked, because every time the government tried to do something and it roused the people up enough that they were burning up their representative phone lines, they were faxing them, they were emailing them. If we had 1 million people, 100,000, 20,000. If we had 20,000 people email and call their reps about something, it would have a hundredfold more effect than those 20,000 people signing a note somewhere. That's what I'm just trying to say. I'm not trying, and I agree with you that it is also good to have a statement somewhere that a million people have signed saying, look, this is it. This is our line in the sand, and from here we go no further. So I agree with that. I just got to say that if 20,000 people call in each state call their representatives tomorrow, it would absolutely change whatever they were going to do.
Well, I'm up here in the Northwest, up here in the Washington State area, and we have although there are a lot of conservative gun owners up here, we are pretty much ruled by the left up here. So regardless of how many people were to call, at least in my situation, we would be outnumbered by those who would probably oppose it. So, and I'm feeling like up here where I am, and a lot of people I know, a lot of friends I have who are like-minded, we kind of feel like even though we could call all day long every day, and even if there were 20,000, that still means that we're just a fraction of the people that oppose us. And I think that at a certain point, and also if you're a representative, say you're, our Governor Jay Inslee, he's going to look at it and go, well, you know, this many people are saying this, but this many people here who vote for me are saying this. So I'm going to discount the gun owners because I want to be reelected. If I go against my constituents in favor of the gun owners,
well,
I'm going to lose.
Absolutely, because if you're living in an area where you are the minority, then yeah, you're right. You're not going to, it's not going to do anything. But at the same time, I don't know. Here's my worry, is that that even your representative who feels like, or he say he's a far left, or he's not going to represent you anyway. He's just going to represent the majority of the folks that are anti-gun. I think that those guys, all of those guys already are arrogant, and they're not going to listen to, they're not going to listen to any kind of a threat anyway. I think they'll just say, look, if people give us trouble, we get on the phone, we call Andrew Air Force Base, we get them to, you know, deploy five or six spooky gunships, and the problem's over. So I don't know that any kind of a threat
I'm not saying threaten them. I mean, that's not what I would do. I would just say, it's kind of like playing chess, where you have to set yourself up as far as the best defense, and once they advance on you, you're already set up. And that's what I'm trying to get to, is that, you know, we just need to be vigilant. And we can try that route, but I believe it's been going on for, I mean, you look at the 94 AWB. I mean, there were people who were speaking out about that too, and it still came to pass for 10 years, and you had the assault weapons ban.
Right. But at the same time, look at what happened to the Clinton government when that happened. It gutted them. It stripped everybody out. That was as far as they could go, because they got gutted.
But we still had to live with that for 10 years, though.
Yeah, we still had to live with it. You're right.
Right.
But
so,
it did sunset, and it was a hard spanking that they got. And believe me, every one of them is thinking about that right now. That's why there's not 100 more of them clamoring to get it done, because that was only 10 years ago. They're all still very familiar with what happened to the spanking that everybody got when they got on that bandwagon and rode it in.
Right. So, but are you willing to risk again 10 more years of persecution of our Second Amendment rights?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, you said that although it did pass and they did lose their positions, they lost elections as a result of it, but the ban still went on for 10 years. So even
right.
if
and then it sunsetted, and they're
right.
they're looking at it now, yep. and they're saying, I'm telling you, even all the Democrats out there are saying, I'm not going to risk my job.
But how can we be
by
sure
voting
that?
For this thing or pushing it? I'm just saying that was a lesson that they learned.
Then this should be a non-issue right now. Then it should be a non-issue. It should be dropped by the media. There shouldn't be any discussion of it right now, because
the media is going to drop anything. That's what we were talking about earlier. It's the media never drops anything. They'll whip that dead horse into the ground. But it is a done issue as far as the government's concerned. Nothing else is going to happen. They're not going to push it anymore. It's pretty much a done deal and over with.
Well, you keep hearing about Feinstein and her ilk. And if the threat of being thrown out of office is such a real threat, then she would have stopped talking about it months ago, or she wouldn't have even brought it up.
No, she's not going to get thrown out of office. She's not. But she can't find anybody to help her, because they will get thrown out of office. That's what I'm saying. She can keep on yakking about it all she wants, but she's not going to find anybody to help her. So it's done. Nobody's going to do anything over this, and I wish they would hurry up and get that information out so that we could get ammunition prices back where they were.
Well, I totally agree with that. Yeah, it's hard to get trained without buying ammunition. But, I think I heard something earlier today that was, that we're mainly battling ignorance by the general population. They're being fed a bunch of crap by the media, and it's hard to get our education out and information out when we're being bombarded, or they're being bombarded constantly by this, as they call it, they're the low information voter. They hear a little bit from a little news blurb, and all of a sudden they form their opinion that, guns and black guns, they're evil, and they're all automatics, and they all shoot huge bullets, and they all, explode upon impact, you know what I mean?
Right.
And
it's
tough because, I don't want to be. I don't want to have this infighting amongst ourselves between, guys who are, say they're hunters against guys who are more tactical. I don't want to see divisions between those guys. especially. I think now we need to unite as people who...
There's always going to be that. I mean, I agree. I hate to see it too, but you know what? We are absolutely great about eating our dead, you know, in the gun culture. We're absolutely great at it, you know, about not standing together and letting other people go down as long as we get to keep ours, you know. And we have a wonderful history of that.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, we've got to stick together. I don't really care. You know, it used to be this whole division like, you know, oh, geez, you know, you're a Glock guy or you're a 1911 guy or whatever, or you're a black powder guy, you know. And
right.
Now it's like, you know, it shouldn't matter anymore. It's like we need to just solidify, pardon, and gel together.
I use a bolt gun. Well, remember what happened to, dang, I can't think of his name now. But remember the hunting and shooting guy? He'd been doing it for 40 or 50 years, and he happened to make that blunder of saying, why do they need those anyway? You know, they don't need a gun that shoots like that, and he lost his job over it. What was his name? I can't think of it now. Anyway, yeah, you're right. We do have the divisions within the gun culture. They're more than willing to do that. They're not going after my over and under shotgun, so what do I care?
Well,
you know,
not yet.
Who needs those anyway? Who needs those guns anyway like that?
Right.
Those machine guns, you know, because people are ignorant. They're ignorant of the facts. They're ignorant. You get people all the time who think that, why would you want that? Why would you want a machine gun? And they're more than willing to throw somebody else on the fire as long as they get to keep theirs, because they don't understand, and they're not looking at the big picture, which is ours this week and yours next week. They don't think that. They just think, all right, if we got to sacrifice something, let's sacrifice this and we'll just keep ours.
Right, right. It's like I was talking to a guy today. I told him it's like a game of chess. You know, they're going. They know what the move is 20 moves from now, but they're working on move 4 right now. You know what I mean? And
right.
So maybe you're not at risk right now, but eventually, you know, at move 15, you will be at risk. So
well, certainly, and that's one of the reasons that like Feinstein's bill came in, and it sounds so crazy, and it's so broad and so encompassing. Because they can always trade down now.
Exactly.
You know,
the used car salesman trick, you know. He wants to sell you a car for $20,000, but he actually wants $16,000, and you go, I'll tell you what, I'll offer you.
Oh, man, I'm saving some money. I got to buy this. Yeah. And that's what this bill is. It's like, and because that gives both sides room. You know, it gives the guys that are supposed to be representing you saying, yeah, I know we let... I know we let XYZ through it. I know that we took your mags, your high-capacity mags and stuff away, but we did save this, and we would not let this happen. So it gives both sides room to, you know, to fail you. And
right.
I'm sure it's all calculated.
And that gets back to my first point, is that calling and writing and things like that, they're all well and good, but you know, all your rep has to do is come back and go, man, I really fought hard for you, but this is what we got. It's like, no, we didn't write you because we wanted to, you know, we want you to compromise. We want you to not compromise.
Right, but the other side of that, and this is what Appleseed's trying to do, because Appleseed is about changing the climate, right? It's not about changing the weather. The weather is rainy this week and sunshine next week and maybe some snow in the winter, you know, on and on. That's the same way it is with politics. Not a Democrat this week and Republicans next week. That's the weather. And the weather, changing the weather does you no good because it's always going to be different. What you have to do is you have to change the climate. And by that, I mean you've got to make it so that the reps know that even introducing some kind of a bill like that is an immediate death sentence. So it never gets introduced because it's an immediate death sentence. And that is changing the climate. And that's what we're trying to do with Appleseed, is get folks to do that. Because just calling your senator and telling them, no, that's no good, it won't do anything. What it has to be coupled with is with your obligation to follow through on that. And when I spoke to my congressman a week ago, and then 2 weeks before that, I made it really clear. I said, look, here's the deal. So far I think you're doing great, because it's a new congressman. And I said, so far I think you're doing great. And what you've promised to do, other things that I would like you to do for myself and my family. I said, but here's the deal, is that if you do not oppose the current firearms craziness, if you do not oppose it, or if you assist it in any way, or if you don't oppose it enough, this assault on my Second Amendment rights, I said, then I got to tell you right now, that's a complete deal breaker, a standalone deal breaker. That means that in the next election, I vote for whoever is opposing you. It doesn't matter what letter they have in front of their name. It doesn't matter if they're voting, if their platform is, I'm going to take every gun away from everybody and every knife and every sharpened pencil, I'm going to vote for them over you, because voting for you didn't do anything for me. So that was my pledge to the congressman. And they accepted it. They said, okay, we hear you and we understand. And now my pledge to myself is I follow through on that. If he doesn't, of course I'm looking at everything that my representatives do, but I'm looking at this one thing specifically too right now, so that if it is not followed through to what I consider to be his obligation to defend the rights that are enumerated in the Constitution and given to me by a power higher than man, then I'm going to vote against him, no matter who it is.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I mean, I guess for now that's.
And I don't think it has to be an either or decision, Jared. I think it can be both. What I'm saying is I'm more than willing to, after I get off the phone with my congressman, to go over to the site that Cal was talking about and sign up on that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying it didn't have to be an either or. I think it can be both, as well as pushing the Appleseed Project, as well as joining the NRA and my Texas State Rifle Association. I think it's not just one thing. It is a whole lot of things all together.
Now, see, I agree there, too, because going back to what Daniel said a while ago, that I've heard before and I agree with, is that the more people you introduce to the sport, in fact, I think it was Jack Spierko on the Rebel podcast was talking about, you know, take someone shooting, don't bring up politics, don't bring up anything else, just be there to answer questions, take them out shooting, you know, pay for their ammo, pay for their range, take them out to lunch and let them, you know, kind of look to you and ask you questions and then get them interested and take the mystique out of it and the danger out of it, and you'll create a fan
Absolutely. I agree completely. That's one of the things that we do at Appleseed. There's no politics, at least no politics that are younger than 235 years. And we don't allow discussion of politics, and we're just there to learn how to shoot. You teach a person how to shoot, and basically it's a whole big picture thing, what you're getting them to do. First, you're getting them off the couch, all right? And then you're setting them an achievable goal, and that is to improve their rifle marksmanship. That's all, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not trying to make them a sniper or a high power shooter or anything like that. You're saying, here's your goal. I want you to improve your rifle marksmanship. And at the end of the day, there's usually about a 100% accomplishment of that. So now they've set themselves a goal and they've accomplished it. And the logical follow-on to that is, okay, I set this goal and I accomplished it. Now, what next? What can I do next? Because that's usually the first thing that comes into the mind of somebody that, as long as it's not like, building Rome or something like that, because after that you go like, okay, I accomplished this, I'm going to take 20 years off. But as soon as you accomplish a goal, usually the first thing in your mind is, okay, all right, I did this. Now what next? And that's why we're trying to get them to think. You're going to chop this thing up into small parts, and you're going to accomplish it a bit at a time. And we're not trying to tell them, whenever I'm at an Appleseed, I tell folks, I say, look, I'm not going to try, nobody needs to tell you how to vote. You're grown men and women. You vote how you want to vote. You want to vote for somebody to take away all the rifles, then by gosh, that's your right, and I want you to go and vote for it. But nobody has to tell you how to vote. You guys vote however you think, but I will tell you this. It's your obligation. It's your duty to vote. It's your duty to be involved in the process, okay? And that's as far as we go with that. But we're trying to get people to get started on setting goals and accomplishing them. And that is a pretty tremendous thing to get folks to do.
Yeah.
Most of the people don't understand that there. First of all, they don't understand that there is a problem. They don't understand that at all. They just came straight off the couch, and they were living their life in 30-minute cycles. They were living their life in 30-minute situational comedy cycles.
Well, that's true.
There's a happy-go-lucky, funny character is introduced, and then there's some kind of drama. And then the drama is resolved, and everything is back to normal, and they're laughing again. This all occurs in 30 minutes. And then you switch to the next one. And then that's how they live their life, in these 30-minute sitcom cycles. And you get to you break that, and of course at Appleseed we will. There is some pain involved sometimes, because when you tell somebody that there is a problem, then they basically have two options. One, they can deny that they heard that, and they can deny that there's a problem at all, and they can go back to the couch and back to the sitcoms, and then their life is good. Or they can realize that they do have an obligation. And once you do that, then you have to realize, okay, now that means work. You know, if I have an obligation, now I have to do something. And not everybody is ready for that, but a lot of folks are. And the whole idea of Appleseed is we're sowing the seeds of these ideas, just like Johnny Appleseed did. And, you know, he had a big job in front of him. And what he did, or what he didn't do, was he didn't put a seed in the ground and cover it up with dirt and then sit there and water it so that he could be sitting there still underneath the tree and 10 years later when the fruit ripened and it could drop into his mouth. He didn't have time for that. He had to reach a lot of apple trees, and so what he did was he went across country willy-nilly, and he was slinging them out. Some of them landed on rocks and barren ground, and they didn't grow, but some of them landed on fertile soil, and they grew. But the thing is, he never knew. He never, for the most part, he never saw the effect that he was having on the countryside, because after the seed left his hand and it was flying through the air, he was walking away. It's the same thing with us. We're putting the ideas in these folks' heads, and we're not following around or calling them and trying to find out what they're doing. We're just trying to put this idea into as many people's heads as we can in the time that we have, and hoping that we're having an effect. That's how Appleseed is working. But there are a lot of different ways that you can get involved, and there's a lot of different things you can do. And you should be picking at least one, something. You don't have to do Appleseed, but do something somewhere. Get involved in some fashion.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I agree totally, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, listen, Jared, I appreciate you taking the time to call into the show and listening. I hope you listen some more. I really like Gunfighter Podcast and did I say that right?
It's called Gunfighter Cast.
Gunfighter Cast. Okay, that's what I thought.
Right.
Gunfighter Cast.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've got it on my iTunes, it's a great program, and I'll listen. And I encourage you guys that are listening now to give it a listen. And And Jared, I hope you listen to this show, and I hope that you call in every time you got something to say.
Can I give a kind of a plug to a different podcast too?
Absolutely.
There's a guy named Ryan who does a podcast called the Gun Runner Podcast.
Gun Runner. Okay, I've listened to that one too.
And he does a great job at that too. Well, a lot of good information and some history and some kind of humorous stuff from time to time. So it's good stuff.
Doesn't he have isn't like his girlfriend on with him or something?
It's his wife, yeah.
His wife. Okay, it's his wife.
Yeah.
Okay, I was gonna say I remember this. That there was a female on with him. I couldn't remember if it was his girlfriend or his wife. Yeah, he does a great job, too. I was telling guys earlier that there are tens of thousands of podcasts out there. And I'm telling you, I've dug through hundreds and hundreds of them. It's hard to find any that are good. But Gun Runner and Gunfighter Cast.
I probably only have about eight that I listen to on a regular basis, because I mean that's how many I've found that I actually have quality. So I don't know. Maybe you can let me know some other ones that actually are good ones too, because they are hard to find for me at least.
Yeah, they are. Well, I listen to Jack Spirko. I listen to the Survival Podcast. He usually has a lot of good information. One of the things I like about Jack is that he. You know, you think about whenever if you hear the word survival podcast, you're thinking, "Oh, great," you know. But it's absolutely not a show on how to cut your jeans up into a loincloth and use the rust to make a tent and stuff like that. This is stuff just like he says, and in case times get harder, even if they don't. And it is all good information for whether anything ever happened or if it didn't. You're still going to benefit from every listen you give to the show. So
yeah.
I enjoy that show, and there's a couple of more, but it, like I said, it's out of all the ones that are out there, it's awfully hard to find a good show.
Yep.
Well, so I'm going to close it up, and if you got anything else to say?
I'm good. Just thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay, Jared, thank you. And I'll tell everybody else, I appreciate you guys listening tonight. And be sure and listen in again this next Thursday, 7 p.m. Central. We've got, we're working on getting Masad Ayoub and the Illinois leadership, the political and the Illinois Rifle Association folks on. We're going to try and have all of them on together. Sheriff Richard Mack will be back on the show. He was here back in 2011, but Sheriff Richard Mack is going to be on the show in a couple of weeks to talk about the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, which is a really great organization. I don't know if you guys are keeping up with it, but we have a lot of county sheriffs that are making their decisions known that they will not enforce unconstitutional laws, and if we get enough of these folks, then we'll certainly be in a better position than we're in now. So be sure and check back with the show, and we'll see you guys this next Thursday, 7 p.m. Central. Thanks, Jed. Thanks, Cal. And Sam, thank you. That's it for the show. We got to see you guys next week.
that we're